y'all. It's Rational Response Squad. About to hit you in your motherfucking face.
It's like they keep telling lies, why they keep telling lies. Jesus never existed and he's ripping off you guys. You'll read the Jesus puzzle, end of faith, the incredible, shrieking son of man. The testament's a scam like that phony ass Koran. Yet they two around like bands, like that whack ass Benny Hinn, Billy Graham, Pope Ben. They some sick and twisted men. Why they lying to the people, trying to turn them all to sheep? The Bible's simply cruel, all of Nietzsche's shit is deep. With a rational response, we critique the evidence. In 2006, religion has no relevance. Just a sick and twisted dance, trying to take the pain from death. Osama selling virgins, what the fuck do Christians get? An ascetic came to earth just to make you feel like shit. Well, you can't die for me, no, you can't die for me. You'll burn me like a witch, go ahead and cry for me. Cry for me. Yo. And this goes out to Rook Sapien, Scientific Mike. Nothing but free thoughts transmitting through the night. Evolution is the record for the evidence we fight. Richard Dawkins, Robert Price, trying to set the record right. On the mic, flow precise, anti-gospel, anti-Christ, anti-ad culture twice. Fuck right-wingers, archetypes, just a bunch of wicked lies. Selling war, selling spies, school liberties are disguised. Why they checking out our lives? Why they can download this track? Patriots invasion app, we're just trying to fight back. Rational and that's a fact. Why they keep telling lies when religion's a disguise to take the pain from death and to govern all the people? I'm asking you the questions in the Inquisition sequel. Most rational people look beyond the good and evil. Most rational people, we look beyond the good and evil. My name is Proclaim once again. Chilling out. The Rational Responders, Mike Rook and Sapien, doing big things. Be on the lookout for the upcoming album, Question Everything. You can find it at ProcleanCreations.com. Once again, this is the Rational Response Squad, bringing it to you live and direct.
Join us right now in the chat room at www.rationalresponders.com. If you are listening to our live stream, join us in the chat room at www.rationalresponders.com.
This is Sam Harris, author of The End of Faith and Letter to a Christian Nation, and you are listening to the Rational Response Squad.
Welcome to the Rational Response Squad. I am Brian Sapient.
I'm Kelly, I'm 78.
I'm Yellow Number 5.
And I'm Razor.
And we are the Rational Response Squad.
Today's program, we have a very special guest, one of the world's most well-known professors of evolution, a popular science writer, and was named by Salon.com as the world's most famous out-of-the-closet atheist. Additionally, in 2004, Prospect magazine listed Richard Dawkins as the number one public British intellectual as decided by the readers, receiving twice as many votes as the runner-up. Dr. Dawkins, it's a great honor to have you on the show, sir.
Thank you very much.
We likely have a lot of new listeners today, so allow me to explain exactly what the Rational Response Squad is in as brief as I can. We're an activist network of atheists who are simply fed up with religion's dominance on society. We seek to unite atheists who want to be more active and vocal about issues pertaining to religion. We openly criticize theism as well as psychics, the belief in the paranormal, and a host of other unproven claims as simply irrational. In less than a year, we have united several thousand atheists who seek to speak out more often, get involved in blunt discourse, and distribute literature that can increase awareness as to the dangers of dogma. We have made progress with mockery-style projects like The War on Christmas at endchristmas.com and The War on Easter at waroneaster.org. You can join us and become active and, of course, listen to our radio show, which is merely an extension of our activism at rationalresponders.com. But of course, today's main topic and the reason why Richard Dawkins is here is because he is decided to stop here as part of his God Delusion book tour. You should pick up the book at Amazon.com. And Richard, might I ask you, what inspired you to write The God Delusion and why now?
I wanted to write it about 6 years ago. And John Ruffin, my literary agent in New York, said, don't even think about it. You can't sell a book like that in America. That was 6 years ago, 6 years of Bush. and now he's changed his mind. And now he was desperately keen that I should write the book, and publishers are very keen on it, and it's selling extremely well. I think it's number 3 on Amazon.com, number 1 on Amazon in Britain, number 1 on Amazon in Canada, but it's still not in any shops, so everybody has to go out and complain to the shops to say, why haven't you got it, along with all the other bestsellers that are piled up on your tables, while The God Delusion lurks obscurely in the religion department in the back.
If you had to describe the book in one paragraph, how would you describe it?
It explains why the existence of God, though not quite disprovable, is very, very, very unlikely. And it also then says, where do we go from there? How do we explain why people are religious? Why are people moral? Do we get our morals from religion anyway? How are we going to protect children from religious indoctrination? And is there some better way than being religious?
Now, we've likened theism to a mental disorder. In that, when you have theism, you often expel rational thought in favor of poor logic and claims with no evidence. In fact, I often joke that disproving the existence of the God of the Bible is easy. It's as easy as adding 2 + 2. What happens to be extraordinarily hard is getting a theist to accept your sound argumentation. In this sense, we see the absence of critical thinking of many theists akin to a mental disorder. Admittedly, one that no psychologist or psychiatrist would ever diagnose. Now, do you think that we're way off base here with comparing theism to a mental disorder in this way?
No, I've said something pretty similar. I compared it to a mental virus, a mind virus. I think it's an infectious disease. It's passed partly down through the generations. In fact, very largely down through the generations, from grandparent to parent to child. But it also is subject to sideways infections from particularly virulent infective agents like Billy Graham and the various mega church pastors who infect huge congregations at one time. I think it's a viral disease analogous to computer viruses.
Another charge we get leveled at us from time to time is that theism can be rational. We obviously don't think that there are good rational reasons to believe in a God, unless maybe you excuse ignorance. But in your opinion, can theism ever be rational?
Well, this is an interesting problem, because we have to make a distinction, I suppose, between the highly irrational theists, people like creationists, who one would think were just nutcases, except that they're so extraordinarily numerous, on the one hand, and on the other hand, sort of serious bishops and priests and popes and people with whom you can have a sensible conversation. I mean, they're perfectly nice people, and they're rational about everything else. And there are sophisticated theologians who, when you actually probe very deeply, it turns out they don't seem to believe in much of what an ordinary person would think of as God at all. So I do think that there is a spectrum. Most of the people, I suspect, in America who call themselves religious believe in a supernatural being, and I think that we could probably agree that mostly what they believe, since about 50% of the American population are actually young Earth creationists, actually believe that the world is less than 10,000 years old, that they really are, well, either irrational or just very, very ignorant. Ignorance, of course, is no crime, and I think that perhaps we need to be a little bit humble and say that we scientists haven't done enough to educate people, because it does seem, if you actually talk to people who say they don't believe in evolution, you ask them what they know about it, they know absolutely nothing about it. They don't know the first thing about it. Mind you, they don't know the first thing about the Ten Commandments either, and they're all for the Ten Commandments. So, I mean, as I say, ignorance is not a crime. I'm ignorant of lots of things. You're probably ignorant of lots of things. So let's try to educate people about the biology of where we all come from. It is now known. It's understood. Evolution is a fact. There are plenty of things in science that are not yet facts, that are still being worked on. But evolution is a known fact. It's as certain as that the Earth is round and goes around the sun. And people need to be educated about that from a very early age. There's no reason why young children shouldn't be taught the truth of where they come from.
That actually leads us to kind of a question that Mike had about what the responsibilities of scientists is.
Right. You touched on this a bit as far as the lack of scientific education in the United States in particular. But it seems to me that the general attitude of science organizations has generally been to essentially turn their backs on forms in which they have been challenged to defend Darwinian evolution, on essentially the theory that engaging the intelligent design camp and the creationist camp in such a way would only serve to legitimize their position. For example, the 2005 case where the Kansas Board of Education held hearings on their new science standards were essentially boycotted pretty much across the board by the scientific community. However, then you have cases like in Dover, Pennsylvania, also in 2005, in which the tables were turned to a degree, and the parents of the children actually sued the school district in order to oust this sort of curriculum. So it seems to me like we have to, you know, define, you know, what is the responsibility of the scientific community to the public, and is there a way that the scientific community can fight back against this sort of anti-intellectualism without serving to legitimize that position?
It's a very difficult question, and I mean, my view is that we do have a strong responsibility to educate. So we need to teach people about evolution, to teach people about science, about rational ways of thinking, about skeptical ways of thinking. The one thing I don't do, and that comes up from what you were saying, the one thing I don't do is engage in formal debates with creationists where you have a proposition and an opposition, and you have 20 minutes for this side and 20 minutes for that side, and then a right of reply and a right of reply. That whole atmosphere of a debate format gives the illusion, and it really is an illusion, that we have here a genuine debate, a genuine scientific disagreement between scientists. There's a kind of, gives the false impression there's a kind of equal standing between the two sides. And so, following the advice of Stephen Jay Gould, long before he died, I don't do that. But I could be wrong. I mean, there are other people who do. I'd like to quote my colleague, an Oxford colleague who's a very, very distinguished scientist indeed, happens to be Australian, and when he's asked to do a debate with a creationist, what he says is, "That would look great on your CV, not so good on mine." I've never dared use that argument. I wouldn't have the chutzpah to do that, but he's kind of got a point.
In fact, this is one of the things you wanted to talk about, was, you know, what we need to do, and we personally all feel that confronting theists and letting people hear what our arguments sound like next to theirs is very important. But this is something that it's well known that you don't entertain debates from
not debates. I mean, the only thing I'm against is the formal debate format, where by getting up on a platform with 20 minutes for each side, you're giving the impression that there is a real debate going on here.
That's funny you say that, yeah.
There's a real scientific disagreement. I'm all for just having plain arguments. I mean, I have very long Q&A sessions after my talks. I'm happy to argue with anyone, but not in the formal sort of proposition-opposition format.
You know, we're actually funny the same way. We don't call our shows when we have Christians on debates. We call them interventions. and it's part of the entertainment factor, but from our perspective, it's a much more appropriate term. You know, that formal debate idea, a lot of people want to do that. We don't want to do that at all. We don't ever entertain the idea of a formal debate.
No,
I'd rather
have a discussion.
Talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Have a discussion with them. I'm glad you clarified that point, though, because so many people think that you're not willing to entertain debates. And you're right. I didn't even think about it in that sense, that you do have these questions and answers. I'm reading about your stops on the book tour and the Liberty University stop, for example, where there were all sorts of questions about theism.
And lots of disagreement, lots of argument. But don't give them the impression, don't give people the impression that there is a scientific debate going on. There isn't. There are no serious scientists who are creationists.
Right. By the way, that Liberty University debate, we have a friend who's part of our team who was there and said that he witnessed a girl abandoning religion, crying there on the spot. I don't know if you heard about this, but
how did he know what she was crying about?
He claims to have heard it.
How interesting.
So he recorded a little bit of it, but I couldn't make do of it.
On my website, richarddawkins.net, we're hoping to open a little section called Convert's Corner, where people can write in, and anybody who feels that they've been converted should write in and get a discussion thread going among converts, to converts away from religion. But yeah. this young woman was crying, did you say?
Yeah. It's very it was intense. I heard.
Was she from Liberty University?
No, we don't know. But, I mean, you would think that sort of thing would make it more intense. In fact, I remember you answering a question about anger.
Yes, that was at the same place.
Right. And,
yes.
And, you know, are people angry when they abandon theism sometime? And you were almost amazed
I was amazed.
That kind of reaction.
Yes. And I was just naive. It didn't occur to me. But then people started shouting out and explaining why they were angry. They were angry with their parents, with their teachers, pastors, priests.
Right.
And yes, I can easily see why they would be. But it sounds as though this girl was actually in distress, which is rather...
Well, it's upsetting, of course.
Yes.
You don't want that, obviously, but... To some degree, that's why we're fighting. If she had never been indoctrinated into religion in the first place, there would be no reason to have to throw it off
She
learned, you know, the reality of the situation, when she was given some knowledge.
Having your entire worldview shattered is a traumatic experience that I experienced when I deconverted from Christianity. It was very upsetting, and I did. It's like a grieving process.
Did it happen that suddenly, though?
Well, it was... kind of gradual, but it's like once you turned a corner, then it's like you have to make the decision to either pursue this path or to stop. You know, a lot of Christians, I feel, get to that point. They have the cognitive dissonance, but they decide to shut that off. Being the kind of person that I am, I couldn't do that. So I made the choice to continue doing the research and continue learning as much as I could, despite the fact that I knew where I was going to go. But it was traumatic, and I did go through a period where I was very angry with the people that I felt had deluded me into believing something that just wasn't true.
You probably all heard Julia Sweeney's monologue.
Letting go of God.
Letting go of God. Very, very wonderful, and very funny too. I mean, for her also it was a long, protracted process, and constantly struggling and doing her best to retain some vestige of her Catholic upbringing. The funniest bit was when her mother phoned her, I think, after it had been written up in the local paper that she was an atheist, and the mother said something like, "Well, not believing in God, I could just about understand, but an atheist?"
may I say something?
Yeah, sure. In fact, for those watching right now in the stick camera, we've actually just started recording. This is Richard Dawkins in studio with us right now. And actually, Margaret Downey, the president of the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia, is on your screen on the right-hand side. She's Richard's escort for the day, but also she'll be a future guest of the show as well. She's got a great website, fsgp.org.
Well, I just wanted to comment that I have done a presentation at the Valley Forge Christian College for 2 years now, and I am amazed that some of the information that I give to the students shocks them. And I say, well, you believe in the Bible, and it says in the Bible these things, and they have been spoon-fed other things from the Bible,
mm-hmm.
and have been have no knowledge about the bad things, the wars and the killing and the rapes and the
stoning
and the, you know, the passages that aren't very pleasant. They just didn't even know about.
Oh. Right.
So,
right. I certainly wasn't told them about them. You know, and you know, I was raised Catholic, so I would go to CCD and, you know, things along those lines. You don't learn about that sort of
Catholics
thing.
Catholics don't learn about the Bible at all. The Bible's a dirty book to the Catholic religion.
Yes,
it has to be interpreted by the priests.
It's because we like our idolatry, and you know, we don't want to hear
sacred
anything about graven
and
images.
And, things,
and that was what was so beautiful about Richard's speech today, was that he went into those unpleasant areas and talked about those things. And perhaps if more and more people actually read the Bible, they would be converted to atheism.
That's what did it for me.
Well, I think that's true, but also, I mean, like, I think the most dangerous group right now is the fundamentalist Christian groups, and they read their Bibles. They read them inside and out. And in their minds, it's okay because God created all of those people. So, like, you know, the Lord giveth and he taketh away, and it doesn't matter if he chooses to do that at the edge of a sword or by public stoning or whatever method might be used. So, I mean, like, while I agree that for the majority of Christians who are Christians in name only, reading the Bible might be an effective tool to deconvert them, to, like, we really need to be more aggressive when it comes to the fundamentalists who do know their Bible and just don't care. It doesn't matter to them that God is an angry tyrant in the sky.
Are those sort of people even reachable, though?
I don't know. Right. I don't know.
That's how I feel. I mean, I think the moderates are actually worse, the fence sitters, the guys that allow...
They enable.
Forum, this fundamentalist...
Well, that's the point Sam Harris often makes.
Exactly.
I think it's a difficult question, really. A lot of people say that I'm too aggressive and that I should... People say to me, how on earth do you expect to win people over if you turn them off on page one? And I don't actually turn them off on page one. I turn them off on about page 21, I suppose. but it is a serious question. Should you be all nice and gentle and kind of wooing people in, which is certainly one perfectly reasonable tactic? Or there is another way of looking at it, which is break the bubble of respect, break the taboo against criticizing religion, show that it can be done, push the envelope, not by being actually rude and positively aggressive, but just show that bolts of lightning don't suddenly rain down on you if you criticize God. Nothing's going to happen to you if you criticize God or criticize religion. They have sheltered behind a wall of respect for so long, and we all, not quite all of us, but many, many people play along with that. And this whole idea of taking the gentle course, going for the decent, moderate, middle-of-the-road religious people and wooing them, maybe that's the wrong thing to do. Maybe the thing to do is to go out, not exactly with all fists flying, but at least to show there is no special respect that needs to be accorded to religious people, no more than you would respect people's opinions about economics or politics or anything else. You have a robust argument with them. You should have a robust argument with religious people. Let's stop all this automatic respect. And maybe if some of us go a little bit too far, that encourages the rest and shows that this envelope is one that has been pushed well.
Yep.
And other people can push it not quite so hard. But maybe they won't be so afraid in the future. Maybe they won't treat it as just bad manners to attack religion. You should feel as free to attack somebody's religious opinions as you'd feel free to attack their artistic opinions or their political opinions or their economic opinions.
It's funny, today you mentioned good cop, bad cop.
Right.
And yeah, we all looked at each other and winked right away.
We're the bad cop.
Because we've already, this analogy's come up many times. In fact, the infidel guy is a friend of ours. His show comes on right before ours. And he's the good cop.
Okay.
We're the bad cop. And a lot of people have said, you know, you guys go too far. Maybe from us they'll learn that there's a reason to question. And it's the good cop that actually makes the person... You know, we've got this pill of truth, and the Christian doesn't know that they need the pill of truth. Now, we're here to shove the pill of truth in their mouth. Somebody else comes along and says, here's a glass of water. You know, swallow it. And so we've made this analogy many times. That, I mean, very much like, in fact, we want you to be our honorary bad cop sergeant of the Rational Response Squad.
And we don't do it in an insulting way. I mean, it's an educational way. Well, it's educational.
It's insulting from their perspective oftentimes. But that's the whole point. That why is it insulting that we say that, think about it, oh, you don't have evidence for God and you believe in this. How many other beliefs do they have that they don't have evidence for that they believe?
Right.
They're not consistent themselves. They rarely, if you think of the common theist, they generally don't fall for, you know, scams. They can figure out what a scam is, and they can figure this out. You know, they want evidence for claims, but for this one claim, they allow it a free pass.
I mean, if people are arguing about what sort of car to get, and somebody says this car's best, somebody else says that car's best, you argue about it. You say, well, this has got a better gearbox, that's got better steering, this has got better seats, and so on. You don't suddenly say, you've insulted me by doubting my taste
choice of car.
Yeah, my choice of car. Religion is the one place, and it somehow managed to get itself into this privileged position. And that's what the bad cop way of doing it can break down. And even if we do go a bit too far, it sort of helps other people to go the right distance.
What would you say is the biggest danger of religion?
Well, to me, as a scientist, it's teaching people not to think rationally, not to think skeptically. It's teaching people that it's okay and positively virtuous to believe things by faith alone, or by authority alone, or by scripture alone. That's a rather personal view, because I am a scientist and I do care passionately about truth. Other people would almost certainly say that greater dangers come from violence, come from the hatred that religion engenders, comes from the divisiveness that religion fosters, and those are important. But I want to put in a plea for the idea of religion as an enemy of thinking truthfully about what actually is true about the real world.
You know, you've recently started a foundation for the advancement of science and reason. Listeners can learn more, by the way, at www.richarddawkins.net. What do you most hope to achieve with the foundation? I know there's many different areas you're going to get involved in.
Well, in my wildest dreams, I'd like to raise enough money to set up an anti-Templeton prize. I do think that one of the problems with religion is the prodigious amounts of money they've got, tax-free money. And so they've got it coming out of their ears, and they really can misuse it. And the Templeton Foundation is just one example of that. They're all like that.
Allow me to interrupt you on a very positive note. I don't know if you're aware, but we got together with some of our listeners to help do just that for you. We really like what the goal of your foundation is. So I've got a little gift for you. And this is actually on behalf of
a big novelty
of
check.
Oh, wow.
As well as all of our listeners, we've raised $1,620.
That is wonderful.
For your organization.
Oh, so look at that.
That's the big fake check that will send the real thing through a real check.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Can I put that on my wall?
Yes, of course. Yes, you can, of course. Yes.
I think I would have to, because I couldn't possibly fit it in my luggage, but thank you very, very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, because everybody's constantly accusing, you know, atheism of being a religion. If it is a religion, can we qualify for tax-exempt
status
also?
It's a very good point, yeah.
Maybe we should take that angle.
It's an appropriate response when people accuse us of being a religion. Mm-hmm. That would be the right. Let's have church status.
Yes, the Richard Dawkins Foundation.
Well, are there,
you know, qualify.
The Church of Richard Dawkins.
Are there clear-cut guidelines for what does actually make a tax-exempt religion? I mean,
I'm sure,
does anybody know that?
I think in Britain, at least for a while, it had to be monotheistic. You couldn't be polytheistic. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Really? Yeah.
So no Hindus.
I always wanted the Hindus to bring a test case, yes.
Yeah.
That sort of leads into another question that I had. On a previous show of ours, we had historian and philosopher Richard Carrier. He said that he would consider philosophy to be his religion in a loose but non-dogmatic sense, because it essentially gave him all the things in life that people would traditionally find in an organized religion, you know, be it a social network, a worldview, comfort, along those lines. Would you say that you would feel similarly about science?
Yeah, I've thought a bit about this.
Use that term, religion.
If you write down the things that religion does for people's psychology, and as you say, it is things like comfort, it's explanation, it's providing a moral framework, it's providing rules for living, it's providing a kind of social network. And all those things can be provided by non-supernatural beliefs, or not beliefs is that's the wrong word. I'm not sure what you call it. Science could do that, or various sorts of organizations could do that. But I prefer to reserve the word religion for something supernatural, because that, I think, is what most people mean by it. The fact that not everybody means that by it is a source of enormous amount of misunderstanding. And people will say things to me like, well, you believe in love, don't you? Well, obviously, then you've got a religion. I mean, and if you're going to do that, I think Steven Weinberg said, if you believe that God is energy, that you can find God in a lump of coal. Mm. But, I think that's messing around with language. And, my normal response to this question is, religion means to most people something supernatural. However, I'm rather attracted by this tax idea. And the next time I'm accused of starting my own religion, I shall say right.
You're absolutely right.
I've always just found it, you know, kind of, you know, funny that the theist will often level the very charge against you that they're so proud of. So, like, well, science is your religion. Saying it as having a religion is some sort of a bad thing. Well, what of you? So,
but I actually seriously wouldn't advocate calling it a religion, because I think that it does carry this idea of superstition, of supernatural. And there are major differences. Like, scientists are proud of changing their mind. I mean, they're waiting for the opportunity to change their mind. It's part of what scientists do. When the evidence warrants it, they change their mind. And that's not what religious people do. One thing I'm curious about is, why do you think religious people often so extremely hostile. I mean, there's a real passion in their hatred, which I guess, do you get hate mail? I don't get much. And on the face of it, you'd think that here we are, all we're doing is we're disagreeing about the universe and cosmology and humanity and morality and things, but these are just perfectly good academic disagreements. Where does the hatred come from?
Well, you're threatening their worldview. Yeah. Yeah. You're threatening everything that they hold to be dear and precious in their
lives.
Well,
they're threatening my worldview, but I don't feel hatred or I don't feel the need to threaten them.
But well, you that's don't have much to lose.
You have the religion of atheism, which is clearly
the religion of atheism. Yes.
Don't you think that hatred stems from reading the dogmatic stylings of the Bible?
Well, you could say that, but you know, to some degree, most of them haven't read that or don't even know it.
But they know what hell and brimstone and that type of cursing.
Well,
is.
That sort of idea, yeah, could be ingrained in them. But I think that people are just it's as if you said to somebody that you knew their mother wasn't their mother. They were never, especially if you come at them in a way where they feel threatened by the way that you're saying it, as if you're trying to insult them or something. Because a lot of times I think they think that if we call religion irrational, well, then, then they're, then we hate them or something, which is clearly untrue. But, if you were to tell somebody that their mother isn't their mother, that'd be a pretty life-shattering thing. You know, every experience they've had in their life, they've gone to their mother, their whole, they were raised by their mother, and just all these things that are just so locked into their mentality that if you were to take that away from them, you basically just taken away everything they understand to be true.
Well, don't you think a lot of overly religious people are somewhat narcissistic in that they think that God looks after them and the world revolves around them, and then suddenly they're being told that they're insufficient, they're just part of a natural occurrence, and then all of a sudden they're not special anymore.
God saves me a parking place.
Yeah, and then when they realize that the world is much different than what they thought it was.
I would definitely agree with that because, you look back through, at one point the Earth was the center of the universe, and it keeps becoming less and less about us, that we're not as special as we like to believe that we are. And I think that is scary to a lot of people.
Well, I think there's a strange dichotomy in religious belief, though, that on the one hand, yes, we're God's special creation, but at the same time, we're these, disgusting little creatures that are not worthy of anything less than burning eternal torment in a fiery hell. So, I don't know that I would necessarily say that I think that a lot of Christians are necessarily narcissistic, because they have this strange thing where it's like, yes, I'm special, but I'm a piece of dirt at the same time. I think that mostly their anger just stems from the fact that they need to cling to this belief so desperately for whatever reason, because they've invested so much of their emotion in it, but
yes, if you wasted most of your life on it, I suppose it would be fairly threatening to feel.
It would be.
Yeah, and even more so. I mean, it's the biggest conspiracy on Earth. It's such a huge, the biggest scandal the world has ever known. And when you believe it your entire life and then have to drop it, you just want to reject it. There's nothing that you want to do to accept it. Accepting it would just tear you up. Think about the amount of money that they funnel into the church.
Yes. The greatest story ever sold.
If you're somebody who tithes regularly, at 30, 40 years old, you could have given $20,000, $30,000 to
all of that money straight down the drain. And right. Suddenly, yes.
It's a damn good thing they can't return after they die for the church for a refund.
Yes. Can I raise another question? I'm curious about an aspect of American politics. I think I'm right in saying that there's not a single one of the 535 members of the United States Congress who is admitted to being anything other than religious.
I think you're right. Think
and
you're
correct. That cannot be true statistically. I mean, it just is. It would be preposterous if people who, at least some of whom, must be drawn from the intellectual elite, are really all religious. They've got to be lying,
right?
And they are lying because they have to lie in order to get elected. They're terrified of the religious constituency.
Right.
Now, what is wrong with the non-believing constituency that they can't exert an equal amount of pressure? Non-believers in America are very, very numerous. They're more numerous than Jews, who are notoriously effective as political lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Why are not American politicians frightened of the atheist lobby? Because there isn't one. And why isn't there one?
Well, actually, you know what?
There is now.
Just recently, hosted on the show, a group of people who have started one. It's secular.org, and they're actually paying $1,000 right now for information as to who is the highest ranking person in government who's an atheist. And they want people to submit stories or evidence,
yes,
or all sorts of information so they can figure it out. But
yes,
yeah, they're, and they have Lori Littman Brown, you know, a well-respected lobbyist in Washington who's now fighting on behalf of the atheists. But it goes much deeper than that. We need, you know, we are being told over and over and over again, and this goes to the whole respecting religious people's beliefs. This is what they do. They get you to believe that we need to respect other people's beliefs while they disrespect the beliefs of atheists. And that hypocrisy, that the fact that people don't see that is remarkable to me. And it ends up, we live in a culture where people just literally hate atheists. I mean, we're the most disrespected minority in America. And, you know, why? Because lies are spread. I mean, even just the lie that most, if you walked up to people on the street, 8 out of 10 people would tell you that an atheist is somebody who knows for sure that no God exists. I bet you 1 out of 10 people would tell you something about Satan worship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, the lies that are spread about atheists, it's just ridiculous. In fact, Margaret, I mean, what sort of stories? I mean, you run the Anti-Discrimination Network. You get stuff like this all the time.
Yes, and I receive narratives that range from everything from family members being shunned and communities shunning an atheist when they're known, to people losing jobs, to an actual murder. You know, where we had an Eagle Scout who discovered his neighbor was an atheist and he felt compelled to kill him.
Yeah.
But, you know, we see this constantly because we are the most despised minority in America. And I am so passionate about this that I can't actually go out and lobby because I'm like Richard, you know, I don't have that political savvy. I just have the honest truth.
So why do you think it is that we're, I mean, I say it's lies from Christianity, but do you think I'm right? You think that's it?
I think it's more than that. It's because we've been silent for so long.
Exactly. We have created this monster ourselves. And when we think of getting into politics, we realize that it will be a very expensive venture and the chances of us winning are very, very slim. So we have a hard time getting money to finance our campaigns. And I've seen this over and over and over again. We had Eddie Tabosh in California running for state assembly, and he spent almost $1 million on his campaign. And of course, he lost. But he tried very hard. If I were to announce that I wanted to run for school board, of course, the first thing that's going to be used against me is the fact that I'm an outspoken atheist. Do you think that I could get financial help in that regard to run for a school board position? I think people in the atheist community would say, oh, she's never going to win that, so why give her all my hard-earned money on the basis that she'll probably not win? But, you know, what I'm saying is let's get these candidates out there who, even if they are going to lose, at least they're having a voice in the political arena, and they can get the word out that not all atheists are bad people, that these are, you know, politically concerned people, they're socially concerned people, and we just need to have a presence out there. Whether we're going to win or lose, we have to have a presence out there.
Right, and simply having that presence is what helps dispel a lot of the misconceptions that people still hold to this day.
What about admired role models? I mean, senior scientists, film stars.
There's this guy that everybody respects. His name's Richard Dawkins. Very well known.
There are a few atheists, like especially in the
All of Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah, just about all of Hollywood.
In Hollywood.
Have you ever seen them thank God when they go up to get their Oscar?
That's okay. Well,
no, that's rap. That's all of rap.
You know? That's all of rap.
There are out in Hollywood, but they're actually put down for some of their, you know, things that they say and some of the things they say about politics, even, you know.
Yeah. Or like the Dixie Chicks.
Right.
I mean, that's a... Dixie Chicks
scandal. That was a political thing. That wasn't about religion.
But it's the same sort of thing.
It's the same sort of thing.
How quickly the whole society can turn on them. And they were right. They were right, you know? And it's... You know, how quickly it's just the lie machine, you know? Yeah. It's just the hate machine, you know? Okay, well, they said this, so now they're not allowed on Clear Channel Communications, you know?
That did puzzle me, because after all, half the population didn't vote for Bush, and so why would somebody who said bad things about Bush, I mean, presumably half the population would have agreed with them, and I don't understand why that caused such... Is it that the president, once he's elected, or once he's rigged it, as the case might be, achieves a kind of mystic significance because he is the president, and criticizing the president is like criticizing the flag or something, or what?
I don't think so. I just think it's that the... unfortunately, the conservative, religious people are much better at motivating their base. They will boycott.
God to motivate themselves around.
They will write letters. They will stop at nothing to achieve their objective. And if their objective is getting the Dixie Chicks off of Clear Channel, or if their objective is to get the guy who owns Dairy Queen to promise that he's not going to donate any more money to this foundation that might support abortion rights, it doesn't matter. They're doing it.
Right.
We're getting some questions in the chat room right now, by the way. One of them was, why did our website go down? They find it troubling. We don't know. We're working on it. Hopefully we'll figure that out. Another thought from somebody else was, says, you guys have Richard Dawkins in the studio, start asking him some questions. But you know, you should know that we actually talked to Richard before the show, and you know, to kind of get an idea of where he wanted to go with it, and he actually prefers this format. He said that he wanted to have more of a roundtable discussion with us about some issues. So he, you know, he's very tired. He's been on, how many days have you been on your book tour?
Well, I'm too tired to remember that, but I but I'm more interested in having a discussion about where we're going. We've got to be a bit careful, haven't we, about an image problem and not sounding too complacent, all sitting around congratulating each other and things. I mean, we are often attacked for that kind of thing.
Yeah, we need to stop talking and start doing. You know, action is the only course that we should be taking towards our end.
Have you heard about our war on Christmas?
Tell me.
Well, first of all, it's a mockery. Did you know about John Gibson from Fox News, and he wrote a book called The War on Christmas?
Yeah.
Margaret's shaking her head, yes. You familiar with Bill O'Reilly?
Yes.
Okay. In fact, you turned them down for an interview, correct?
Did I? I don't know.
Bill O'Reilly.
I think I did.
Bill O'Reilly and John Gibson are buddies over at Fox News. They're co-anchors of Fox News. And they put out this whole propaganda campaign that there's a war on Christmas. And the war on Christmas is really the secular America saying, at Christmas time, I'm going to say happy holidays to you because I don't know what you celebrate. I respect all cultures, and so I'm going to say happy holidays. Well, they don't like that. For example, when you go Christmas shopping, they want the checkout people to say Merry Christmas.
And not assume.
Right. What's that?
And assume everyone
right,
is a Christian.
And assume everybody's a Christian. And if you're not a Christian, well, you know, you have a Merry Christmas. So now this is the idea. So therefore, because of this, there's a war on Christmas, and everybody needs to lash out against this. And really what they do is they just breed hate and ignorance. And so what we did, alongside with Brian Fleming, as you know, you were on the commentary track for The God Who Wasn't There, is a friend of the show and friend of ours, and he came up with this idea. He said, you know what? They want a war on Christmas. Let's show them what a war on Christmas would look like. It's a purely nonviolent campaign. In fact, he says the violence, we leave that up to Christians. They believe that a man got flung up on the cross, nailed, you know, bloodied, you know, died, came back to life after 3 days, you know, rose from the dead. You know, we'll let them have that, their violence, and we'll instead spread literature on Christmas. We'll go into churches and give out free copies of The God Who Wasn't There DVD. and put them in the Bibles and the hymnals, hand them to preachers, pastors, whatever we can do. Just give them out to people and say, here, watch this. You know, Jesus Christ, maybe he never even existed. You know, just think, you know, that type of thing. So this Christmas, we're printing up 1,000 copies. We did 500 last year. We did 600 at Easter. They did a war on Easter too. We did the war on Easter. And it's, in fact, for activists out there, Margaret's saying, do something. Listen, you know, waronEaster.org is the Easter project. EndChristmas.com is the Christmas project. But seriously, what do you think of, you know, I mean, people say you're invading their space and just leave them alone. They're not bothering you. But of course, we both know they are bothering us. So.
Yeah, for me, it's a question of priorities. I never can get too bothered about things like Merry Christmas. I mean, I'm more worried about the way they get these tax breaks and things like that. I've got a nasty feeling that if we spend all our time fussing about Christmas and other campaigns that, you know, like In God We Trust on the notes and things, which are symbolic, are they, while our attention is devoted to these issues which might be called tokenism, they're getting away with billions of dollars in tax breaks.
Yeah, the New York Times just had a 5-article series on all of the ways that churches can circumvent laws that apply to everybody else, not just tax law, but even like regulations as far as their schools go, safety codes and daycare centers. You know, I mean, certifications, all kinds of things that they can get away with just because the organization is labeled as it's church affiliated.
Well, I want to have a war on that. That's what it's all that kind of thing. I would have a war on. Well, let's be distracted.
That's
by
the type
Christmas.
Of stuff, though, for us that's harder to move on. It, you need like a team of lawyers and tons of money.
Wow.
I think that to some degree, if you can, because what that's doing in essence is hopefully removing Christians. You know, hopefully they're becoming better thinkers. They're leaving Christianity. And if you can remove Christianity, those people wouldn't be able to get away with it. So it's just another way to do it. Admittedly, you're right. It's very much a token issue in that sense. But I think to some degree, it's cutting off the knees of religion as opposed to little points. I mean, you can take away tax benefits and things like that, but they're still going to be religious.
Yes. I think what I want people to do with Christmas is give all their Christian friends a copy of The God Delusion or Sam Harris's books, and something like an advertising campaign, fed up with Christmas, right, give an anti-Christmas present.
Well, there you go.
That would be nice if I could get my brother to actually touch a piece of my literature.
His brother is a Catholic, and he'll give him a piece of something, a literature that we're working on, the God Who Wasn't There movie, for example. He won't even touch it because he believes that it's got some sort of, like, demon thing. Hands are melt, yes.
Well, we at the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia have brainstormed for years about how to set up at the Free Speech Zone in Philadelphia a display that depicts what the free-thinking community believes in. And this is to counter...
What do we believe in?
This is to counter a giant creche and a giant menorah, okay? When people walk by the Free Speech Zone, they think Judeo-Christian country. So what we came up with was this design where we're going to, I hope, if we get enough money together and enough enthusiastic members to make this happen, a giant tree called the Tree of Knowledge. And as the decorations on this tree are going to be the book covers of recommended books with, you know, beautiful bows coordinating with the colors of the book covers. They'll be laminated so that they can withstand the weather, and they'll be hung all over the tree.
Will that be safety locked so they can withstand the vandalism?
Well, there'll be a little fence around the tree, and on the fence will be a mailbox, and inside the mailbox will be all the books listed that are hanging on the tree, and it will be our recommended Tree of Knowledge book list. And people can, you know, take those when they walk by. They'll just be able to take a copy of our book list. And hopefully we can spread the word that knowledge is the key. Without knowledge, you are not free to
Where's
make
this,
choices.
How far are you on the project?
We are having our board meeting in December, and we already have a $100 donation.
There you go.
But we, you know, what I'm also thinking is that some of the authors that we highlight on this Tree of Knowledge might donate money because we're advertising their book.
What sort of money do you think you'd... Is it money that you need to pay to the city or just to organize a display?
We already have the permit.
So the permit's out of the way. It's just the money now.
Right.
Well, what sort of money do you think you'd
need? I'm thinking it'll be about a $6,000 project.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll help in some way.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. We'll expect a donation. We'll
All right.
Can I raise another
yes, please.
Question? We just had lunch with three of the lawyers who were involved in the Dover, Pennsylvania case. It was a very great privilege for me to meet them. And one of the things that came up was I raised the question of the rights of children to be protected from their parents. And this seemed to be a complete no-no to the lawyers. It seemed to be absolutely foreign to the American legal system. And I was not a thing I'd really thought about much, but I've heard about children being homeschooled, taken out of school because the parents don't want them to learn certain things in science. And it seems that the American legal system takes it absolutely for granted that parents own their children, own their minds. Lawyers didn't put it this way. This is the way I'm putting it. To the extent that parents can deprive their children of an education in what is absolutely normal, accepted science, and that is their right. And I'm wondering what you think of this. Am I in a minority of one here, or does anybody else think that children have some sort of rights to an education if their parents are trying to stop them getting an education?
I think we talked about this last time on the show, and I think that we kind of came to what might be a reasonable conclusion, although we wouldn't know how to enact it, would be that the children should be forced to some degree to have some public schooling, and by some we mean not like 1 year at home and 1 year at public, but maybe like 2 hours at public school per day, or maybe 2 days per week or something like that, to be supplemented with homeschool education. But there, you know, in some respects, there are some people that can homeschool their kids worlds better than you could ever get.
Of course, yeah. But don't they have to have some sort of certification to show that they can?
It depends on the state. It's state by state. In Pennsylvania, for example, if you choose to homeschool, well, before the age of 8, you don't have to do anything. But if you choose to homeschool beyond that point, you have to present to your local board of education a portfolio that demonstrates your curriculum, the materials you're using, has examples of the child's work, and where they actually go through this to make sure your child is getting an appropriate education. So you have to cover science. You have to cover topics like evolution. Now, how I'm sure that a lot of these parents who homeschool are like, yeah, we're teaching evolution today, honey, but don't believe it. It's all nonsense. I don't know exactly how we could go about preventing that kind of thing from happening. But those same parents, even if their children were in school, when their kids got home from school that day, would say, we learned about this today, and they would tell them the same exact thing. I don't know what we can do to stop that. But in other states, if you say, I'm homeschooling, that's the last contact you have with your school district. There's no accountability. Anything.
Maybe some of those children are not getting any schooling whatever.
Certainly that does happen in some cases. So, you know, like I said, I mean, the regulations differ by state. But I do think that while homeschooling, I believe, should remain an option because the public school system is atrocious. And if you choose to homeschool because you realize that the education that the public school system can offer them is inferior to what you're able to offer, I think that should be an option. But at the same time, I think that it needs to be closely monitored to ensure that these children are actually receiving an appropriate education.
Yeah, but I think that the lawyers were suggesting that that somehow it is an absolute legal right of parents to do what they like with their children, almost. I mean, you can't actually...
Oh, as far as instilling religious belief in them, certainly. I mean, I don't think there is anybody
proposing, in essence, that, you know, that indoctrinating your child into something like this would be akin to child abuse. Correct?
Well, that's what I feel.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
But that's also my personal opinion.
How do you change that? I mean, how do you even go about it?
Well, quite.
Yeah,
At the Atheist Alliance International, we tackled this. I am now the president of the Atheist Alliance International, and we came back from the conference in Iceland where Richard spoke, and we saw his beautiful film done by the UK Channel 4 called The Root of All Evil, and it inspired
us.
Yeah. And it inspired us to write a resolution condemning indoctrination of children with religion. And I don't know how far that's going to get us, but at least we're putting ourselves on record as being concerned about the issue, trying to do something about the issue, and putting language together that many of our member groups can then use when they approach these problems in their local areas.
Could I just broaden from indoctrinating children to labeling of children? It's another pet peeve of mine, but the idea of just even calling a child a Christian child seems to me to be immoral and child abuse. If the child is too young to know, too young to have made up its own mind what it is, then you should no more call a child a Christian child than you call a child a Marxist child. Nobody does
or
that.
Or a Republican child.
Or an atheist child.
Or indeed
please
an atheist
do
child.
Do not label your children atheists.
There's no such thing as an atheist child.
Exactly. And, you know, we should be up in arms about that. And don't bring your children to protests, you know, and expect them to hold a protest sign. I think that is disgusting if you take your child.
Really, to some degree, though, and I don't, but I mean, to some degree, though, don't you think that some of that is, and I guess it's depending on the protest, really, but to letting your, teaching your child how they should speak out for what they believe in? I mean,
yes, but there is a certain age.
What age do you think would be?
I think 13
yeah.
would be a good age to start that process, but you know,
yeah, not like four
exactly. And I do a lot of
pawns.
I do a lot of protesting, and when people show up with very young children, I ask them to go home because I don't think that.
Well, it
right.
could be that they brought their children because they had nothing else to do with them. I mean, the children may not be actually holding a banner; they could just be tagging along.
Yes, and some of the parents have actually put a T-shirt on a child saying, "You know, I'm an atheist," and I don't think that's right either. You can't label your children with your own particular political thing or your own philosophical life stance.
Well, if the child does actually question, would it be all right to just say, hey, if you want to know, come with me? I mean, this is what
yes,
I do. This
of,
is
part
my
of the learning yeah. process. Yes. I mean, that's
asking
that's
a question, right. You do want to give an honest answer. But baptism, I protest against baptizing a child who hasn't made that choice for themselves. So, you know, that's another thing we should stand firm against. Do not participate in baptism of your nephew or your niece or, you know, in the family, because that's condoning that practice, that it's okay.
Right. Well, even as far as you mentioned baptism there, and Richard earlier basically alluded that he basically had the impression that parents own their children. In the U.S., you look at an issue like circumcision and things along those lines, especially when done for religious reasons. And if that's not actual physical abuse, I'm not sure what is.
So, isn't that? Didn't I read about a case of a Muslim father being prosecuted
for
circumcising
his
daughter?
Yes,
with a pair of scissors.
Right, and apparently it's illegal to do that to your daughter, that's but not to your son.
Yeah. Well, it happens. It's illegal in Britain too, but it does happen, and there are numerous children of Muslim parents who are sent up to Bradford, a town in the north of England, ostensibly to stay with an uncle in quotes, where they get mutilated.
Oh, horrible. Well, earlier you mentioned something about children not being atheists. We have this debate pretty frequently on our message boards on whether or not people are born atheists. I mean, technically the word
calling your kid an atheist is no different than calling your kid a human in my mind.
It only means they don't have a belief in a God. If they're not indoctrinated into God belief, then technically they are atheists. So is it really wrong to say my child is an atheist because he does not have a God belief?
You're making a different point, which is a valid one.
But that's part of the speaking out, too. Yes. We're saying, let's speak out, but then we're saying, but our kids aren't atheists.
You really have to have the child have an opportunity to decide whether they're going to choose that philosophy or not.
Atheism is simply what you're born with, is our point.
It's a different point. It's a perfectly valid point, and it's a different one. I mean, in the sense that a child is not born with any beliefs in anything, and therefore from that point of view, that's right. But I think the other point is don't
strong atheist.
Yes,
would be what
something like
not.
That. Yes, but it is another example of the privileging of religion that we our whole society buys into the idea that children can be labeled Catholic children or Protestant children. And they do it all the time. You see it constantly in the newspapers. Catholic children in Northern Ireland were set upon by Protestant mobs on the way to the Catholic school and vice versa. And that I'd really like to raise consciousness about. That should really grate like fingernails on a blackboard.
Well, I think it's just another aspect of getting out there and talking to people. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of people don't even think about that.
Yes, they don't.
You know?
That's like, what consciousness raising is about. Yes.
So, I mean, just another aspect of getting out there as atheists is putting it out there that this is child abuse. To us, this is child abuse no different than any other form of brainwashing or mental, you know, psychological damage that you're causing your child. Just to put the little, you know, put your foot in the door just a little bit, you know. We're not going to be able to get into their homes and make them stop doing it.
And that's why it's very important for us to not be hypocrites by, if you get an invitation to go to someone's baptism, I would say don't go.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say go.
you don't want to be a hypocrite. You want to stand firm and say, I'm not going because I don't believe that is the proper thing to do to your child.
Or it would be the same thing if they said, you know, I'm going to bless my child in Smurfdom this weekend. It's like, yeah, no, sorry. I don't really think that you should be blessing your child in Smurfdom. So, you know, once again, you're listening to the Rational Response Squad. Check out our sponsor, EvolveFish.com. EvolveFish, of course, is the home of a rational response to the Jesus Fist. Little Evolve Fishy with little legs and a little tool in his hand. Pretty cool. Check him out. And of course, you could also purchase books and mugs and hats, and I'm sure they've got some great Richard Dawkins products there. So definitely check out EvolveFish.com and please support them, because their support of our show is very important. And you can access them when our website works at rationalresponders.com at the bottom left-hand side and click the Atheist Goodies link. So,
I do have to say, though, if someone's child were being baptized into Smurfdom and I were invited, I would go out of pure curiosity, because that's something I'd have to see.
Hey, Brian, what do you think of just calling the children that we have free-thinking individuals?
To some degree, in fact, if anything, I think that free-thinking, actually, if I look up the definition, I believe it has the word reject religious dogma. And in that case, some could argue that the word reject is actually a conscious, you know, declaring I'm not of that belief. So if that's how you define freethinker, then no. How would you define?
Well, I always said that my kids, that my children were freethinking, in that they were open-minded to everything that they were exposed to make their own choice freely.
Yeah, if you define it like that, then yeah, of course.
Yeah, so. I think that part of it, though, is that the word atheist has been strawmanned to death.
Yeah.
That, oh, it's, you definitely believe there's no God, you worship Satan, we drink the blood of virgin babies, all of these things. So I think, in a sense, that saying, well, all human beings are born atheists, is an attempt to take it out of that realm, out of the strawman realm. And
that's
say,
a good point.
Every person is born an atheist, because all it means to be an atheist is that you don't have a belief in God, period.
End of story.
Yes.
And I think that that's important. If we're going to continue using this word, if we're going to continue defining ourselves as being atheists, the first thing that we need to do is demystify the word. You know, we need to stop that, you know, the insanity surrounding the terminology and say, this is what it is. So every baby out there is an atheist.
Let's put it into law.
Well, I mean, I think we basically just call ourselves that as a counterpoint to a theist. I mean, without theists, atheists wouldn't.
Yeah, it's funny.
Wouldn't exist.
As our friend Amanda Bloom says, atheists are fighting for a world where there needs to be no word atheist.
Right. Yes.
So, and of course, not all atheists. That's part of what we're talking about. Not all atheists are fighting for that world, but we think they should.
We're all atheorists because we don't believe in Thor with his hammer.
Although, didn't you speak about something about that? I think it was the teapot story? But you wrote, you talk about one of these crazy gods, and somebody actually wrote you and said, "I do believe."
No. There's a cult in Malaysia.
Uh huh.
There's a giant teapot. Yes, absolutely true.
Yeah, for the background of this, Richard makes the case that we're all teapot atheists, that we don't believe there's a teapot orbiting the sun, and you can't disprove the teapot, you know, any more than you can disprove Yahweh. But apparently he's gotten some information that there is...
Somebody sent me this website. It's a giant teapot
actually
in Malaysia.
Does believe in it. And Sam Harris has had the same sort of backlash on, I think, both Poseidon belief.
Yes.
Where he uses Poseidon example that we're all atheists to Poseidon, and somebody wrote him and said, no, you're this is outrageous that I believe in Poseidon. Okay, so let's get down to real like business here and how we're going to make this work. Look, you hold the position of Charles Simonyi Chair in the Public Understanding of Science at Oxford University. This position was essentially created as a result of a multi-million dollar donation from Microsoft software developer Charles Simonyi. Now, considering that Simonyi is obviously an atheist, Bill Gates has quotes on the record outing him as an atheist. He's basically funding the God Delusion book tour, which is being considered...
No, he's not.
Intolerant.
He's not.
Okay. All right. Well, you can clarify in a moment. I'm curious. How do we get Microsoft-type money behind Rational Response Squad and maybe even FSGP, for example?
Now, this is unfortunate because Charles Simonyi, of course, I mean, he's not a religious person, but his thing is science. I mean, he wants to promote science, and he thinks that science is the way to go, and he thinks that if you teach people about science, then much will follow, and no doubt religion will finally wither away if everybody's, but he is not financing the God Delusion at all.
Well, so how do we get Microsoft money?
Well,
you asked.
And furthermore, what Charles Simonyi gave to Oxford University was his own personal money. That wasn't Microsoft.
Well, I mean, as a metaphor.
Yeah.
His money is Microsoft money.
Well, I don't know, but I would like to know, and, and if anybody has any suggestions.
How did the position come about?
Well, Oxford University, I suggested to Oxford University that they might like to start a professorship in public understanding of science, perhaps using the fact that that there were some people out there who were fans of my books who might support the idea of freeing me up to do full-time what I was previously only doing part-time. And so, in effect, what Charles Simonyi did was to give the money to set me free to promote the public understanding of science by writing books, etc. And that meant that my previous job at Oxford, my previous salary, was freed up to employ a younger, no doubt more vigorous and agile person to teach animal behavior, which is what I was previously doing.
Do you have questions left on your sheet?
What about how we're going to support science teachers? I get numerous stories of science teachers being victimized, being intimidated, being threatened. I think this is absolutely tragic and a scandal, and I admire the courage of those science teachers who nevertheless go ahead and teach their science in spite of all threats. I wonder whether there's some way they can be given moral support.
You know, we actually have another website called freethinkingteens.com that we've created for kids. And one of the things that we want to do there is we hope that they'll create groups alongside of the Secular Student Alliance. And a lot of times these groups need a sponsor at the school. And that the most often look toward a science teacher. These groups are supposed to be a secular coalition of they can even invite theists into the group. But they're really a way for atheists to meet and discuss. And it's a counter to prayer groups, which happen often around our country. And a lot of times these science teachers, specifically at the high school level, because a lot of times there isn't tenure, they get exactly what you're talking about, this type of backlash from faculty. I mean, I don't know how you would stop this type of, this is anti-discrimination network stuff.
Yeah, my database is full of those stories.
Where kids aren't able to start groups because the science teacher can't.
The teachers themselves
write. The teacher can't sponsor it.
Yeah, the teachers themselves write.
So what do we do?
Well, that's their job. And so I usually refer people to the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, and they file a discrimination case, and sometimes it's resolved at that level. But, you know, there have been many teachers that have actually quit their job and gone to find a different place to work. Some from the South actually move to a more liberal area.
I mean, this is so utterly preposterous because what we're talking about here is not just creationism. We're talking about young earth creationism. We're talking about people who believe the world is 6,000 years old. I mean, this is an educational scandal that 50% of the population believe this. I did a calculation and somebody corrected it. The scale of the error of believing that the world is 6,000 years old instead of 4.6 billion years, it's equivalent to believing that the distance from New York to San Francisco is 17 feet. I got it wrong. I published 700 yards and I had it in the date or something. It's more like 17 feet.
Wow.
That's the scale of the error. It's a colossal error. It's a gigantic error. And yet, half the population believes it. School teachers are being fired. School teachers are being intimidated for teaching that the distance from New York to San Francisco is not 17 feet, but whatever it is, 3,000 miles or something.
Yeah,
fancy being fired for teaching that it's much more than 17 feet from New York to San Francisco. That's what we're up against.
Yes, definitely. And a lot of that's also political. When you look at textbook manufacturers, one of the largest, each state has different laws regarding, you know, how they get their textbooks. And a lot of states buy the same textbook for every school in the whole state. Texas is one of those states. Textbook manufacturers pander to Texas because they're very conservative, but they also have a very, it's huge. If Texas doesn't buy your textbook, you could potentially lose millions of dollars on that. So they take out chapters on evolution. They minimize chapters on evolution. That in some cases, they even will put warnings on the chapter on evolution. And it comes down to the politics because the people down there are conservative. The people on the school board are conservative. If those people
but
don't
you could
like
be
your
conservative
book,
without
money.
Believing that the world is 6,000 years old.
I totally agree, but I'm just saying that again, it's a political and economic issue. The textbook manufacturers want to make money, and to make money, they need to pander to the people with the most money. And unfortunately, it's the right wing conservatives in this country.
Believe the world is only 6,000 years old. I mean, how can they make money if they've got such a cockeyed view of reality?
Was it in your book that I heard that believing in the Earth or being 6,000 years old is like believing that that dogs were just being domesticated?
Well, that's another way. I mean, basically, it believes that the entire universe began after the domestication
of
the dog.
Dogs. That's right. Yeah, that's I kind of botched that one up. But.
And I believe even the example about textbooks was in your documentary on the Blind Watchmaker.
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah, you had an expert on saying that at that point, that was 20 years ago or so.
Yes, it was.
And that same thing was happening then. So
it's the same situation now, and it's not going to change until we go out there. See, like, we're like more of a grassroots organization where we want to reach people because that's what we have the ability to do.
Exactly.
The only way we can stop this kind of insanity, we're not going to be able to go into the upper echelons of government. We're not going to be able to go into the textbook manufacturing companies and get them to change the way they're doing things. But what we can do is go out there and for every person that we can at least convince to open up their minds just a little bit to the possibility that they're wrong, then we're one step closer to getting our nation out of this kind of insanity.
I think to some degree you might have that pull at that level of governmental level where you would be asked to speak at a government function. But all of these issues that we've touched on, how do we fix these problems, I think are exactly what I'm saying, that we need to convince the people to stop believing in this stuff. And then the government can't get
that's
away
what
with
I think,
this.
That's what I think.
As time
but
goes
now, on. Now we have a tactical political problem because people like me, people like us, we are atheists, and the stock of atheists in this population isn't not high. There are other people who are also atheists, but who don't talk about it, but who are passionate about science. And I mentioned Charles Simonyi, who's passionate about science. The NCSC, the National Committee for Science Education, based in Oakland, California, run by Eugenie Scott. Now, these people are really concentrating on the evolution issue. And it is really to them, we are troublemakers. I'm a troublemaker. Because by going on about atheism and when I say something like, it was my Darwinism that led me to atheism, that's meat and drink to creationists, because that's what they want us to say. They want that to happen. Now, I'm so shocked at the figure that for nearly 50% of the American population believes that the world is 6,000 years old, believes in effect that it's only 17 feet from New York to San Francisco, that I sometimes wonder, maybe people like Eugenius got it right. Maybe what we should be doing is concentrating on that one issue and saying, okay, you can stay religious, never mind about atheism, stay religious, but for goodness sake, the universe did begin a bit before the domestication of the dog. I mean, that, maybe that is a better way, and I genuinely don't know what the answer is. My own tactic in the God delusion is to go all out for atheism, because I care passionately about what I think's true. But maybe on this one educational issue, the Eugenie Scott tactic is the right one. I'm interested to know what people here think.
But Richard, we can only do what we feel passionate about. I can no longer, you know, ignore the fact that I don't believe these nonsense stories, then fly to the moon. I mean, it's just part of being a committed
atheist. Well, that's what I feel too, but nevertheless, there are lots of scientists who feel that we're rocking the boat, that I'm rocking the boat.
But we can't be hypocritical. Well, and we can't stay silent.
Many people are, and it might be.
No, if you were to silence yourself, we would pull you out kicking and screaming if we had to, but we would make sure.
On that note, I think we have to silence Richard. We've got to get him out of here. He's got a plane to catch. So there we go. We're going to be hypocrites and silence Richard.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Mike, did you have a wrapping
but
up?
But no, it's really what you can do. In my own old school district, where my mother was recently retired as a school administrator there, the creationist camp reared its head there a few years ago. And having a background in science myself and working in that profession, I went and I spoke to the school board and I spoke to the parents and I spoke to the children in a meeting where they were actually seriously considering bringing ID into the school. It was more so just explaining in very blunt terms what good science was and what wasn't science, and certainly hinting at the legal ramifications that they could be heading down as well. And it's just, it's you know, doing what you can. If you've got the expertise to do something, then please do it. But I think the biggest thing is just, you know, if you have something to say, you need to say it. You can't sit by and do nothing.
Yeah, so. Well, that's what I feel. But there are other ways of doing it, and I do respect the people who are doing it the other way, too.
Well, we very much thank you, Richard, for coming into our studio today and spending some time with us. Thanks so much
for coming. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for this magnificent check here.
You're welcome.
Richard Dawkins Foundation.
Is that the first time you've been handed one of those checks?
Oh, yes. Yeah? Yes. Okay, I hope it won't be the last, but thank you.
Couldn't resist that.
Well, no, you know, actually, yes, people, you know, go ahead and send the Richard Dawkins Foundation some money if you didn't have a chance to this time. It's really important. Guys, he's going to be leading the way. We're calling it now. Richard Dawkins leads the way. So you people need to speak up. In fact, visit us at rationalresponders.com and learn how, maybe take part in the war on Easter or the war on Christmas, the mockeries of Fox. And Margaret, do you have any campaigns that you need people to get involved in?
I just need people to get more involved on the grassroots level. Please visit the website, www.fsgp.org. And I want to compliment Richard on a very fine book tour. And I'm so glad to be on page 45 of your book, Richard. Thank you.
It's really, I don't know if you realize this, but over the last few weeks, every atheist that we're talking to, the thing is to compare what page you are on the God Delusion book. I mean, Ed Buckner and Edwin King and now Margaret, they all drop, you know, I'm on page 41, and you know, Edwin, I think, is a little bit upset he didn't make the index, and so, you know. But, you know, thanks so much, Richard, for coming on today. Until next time, folks.
Stay rational.
Stay rational.
This product warps space and time in its vicinity. This show attracts every other piece of matter in the universe with a force proportional to the product of the masses and inversely proportional to the distance between them. This show contains minute electrically charged particles moving at velocities in excess of 500 million miles per hour. There is an extremely small but non-zero chance that through a process known as tunneling, this show may spontaneously disappear from its present location and reappear at any random place in the universe. The squad will not be responsible for any damages or inconvenience that may result. According to suggested versions of the Grand Unified Theory, the primary particles constituting this radio show may decay to nothingness within the next 400 million years. Any use of this product in any manner whatsoever will increase the amount of disorder in the universe. Although no liability is applied herein, the listeners warn that this process will ultimately lead to the heat death of the universe. The rational responders technically be entitled to claim that their show is n-dimensional. However, the consumer is reminded that this confers no legal rights above and beyond those that are applicable to the three-dimensional object, since the seven new dimensions are rolled up into such a small area that they cannot be detected. Please note, some quantum physics theories suggest that when the consumer is not directly listening to this product, it may cease to exist or will exist only in a vague and undetermined state. The entire physical universe, including the rational responders, may one day collapse back into an infinitesimally small space. Should another universe subsequently reemerge, the existence of this product in that universe cannot be guaranteed. This show is meant for human beings residing on planet Earth who have survived successfully on this planet for 18 years or more. If you've not heard of words like Saddam, God, Jesus, AIDS, cancer, polio, Gates, Osama, Microsoft, or DNA, you are in all possibility not residing on Earth. If you're not sure, please try your favorite search engine for relevant results. We really don't care what you think about us, but if you want to talk to us, send an email to rationalresponsesquad@hotmail.com, and we might engage you in a rational conversation. Irrespective of how much we try, some coincidental coincidence may lead to someone who is like you being discussed in our show. We do not know you, probably, but if we speak about your irrational beliefs and you think we are talking about you, we might have a problem on our hands. So please go away if you cannot laugh at yourself, especially if you are a theist. People who don't want their beliefs laughed at shouldn't have such silly beliefs. There are no warranties or guarantees here. Void or prohibited, some assembly required. Batteries not included. Use only as directed. Do not listen while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. This is not an offer to sell securities. Apply only to affected area. For rectal use only. Do not take orally. Feel free to give us oral. Maybe too intense for some listeners. If condition persists, consult your physician. Subject to change without notice. Time's approximate. Breaking seal constitutes acceptance of agreement. As seen on TV, one size fits all. Contains a substantial amount of non-tobacco ingredients. Not affiliated with the American Atheist. List was current at time of printing. Avoid contact with skin. Employees and their families not eligible. Guests have been briefed on some questions before the show. Limited time offer. Call now to ensure prompt delivery. Pre-recorded for this time zone. Pre-recorded for all time zones. Reproduction strictly prohibited. Decision of judges is final. Don't quote us on that. Don't quote us on anything. Quote us on everything we get right. We're usually right. All rights reserved. Batteries still not included. Any resemblance to actual persons living or dead is unintentional and purely coincidental, except where it isn't. No substitutions allowed. Product is provided as is without any warranties. User assumes full responsibility. An equal theist defender. If any defects are discovered, do not attempt to fix them yourself. Return to an authorized service center. Listen at your own risk. Explicit lyrics. Yes, explicit lyric. No purchase necessary. You need not be present to win. There are no winners. Some assembly required. No preservatives added. No added is preserved. Do not inhale. Do not exhale. Do not try to tell us what the definition of is. I told you before that batteries aren't included. Maybe too intense for some listeners. This product is meant for educational purposes only. For recreational use only. Not for educational purposes. For entertainment purposes only. Take two of these and call me in the morning. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. Now with new plastic applicator. This is not an attorney advertisement or referral service. Please remain seated until the ride comes to a complete stop. This radio show made from 100% recycled electrons. Do not listen while drinking alcohol. On second thought, drink at least two alcoholic beverages for ultimate pleasure. Drinking may cause liver damage. Right lane must turn left. Left lane must turn right. Middle lane must make up their own fucking minds. This show runs on ethanol fuel only. Recycle. Handle with care. Reproduction strictly prohibited. All decisions are final. This disclaimer is not only awful, lame, and downright stupid, but it is in no way intended to reflect thoughts, lies, beliefs, distortions, exhibitions, talents, views, intelligence, or anything else of the person being made fun of. This is simply silliness for you to waste your time listening to and fill up moments of your day in which you have likely paid for. We appreciate those who are paying for our show more than we appreciate those listening to our show for free. This disclaimer is a perfect example of why we need tort reform. Lawyers will sue over anything, and we have to put in long-winded disclaimers to cover our asses. Those of you with an overwhelming fear of the unknown will be gratified to learn that there is no hidden message revealed by listening to this warning backwards. However, by pouring a complete circle of salt around yourself and your computer, you can assure that no harm will befall you or your pets. Allergy alert. This show may contain nutmeg, but we doubt it. Oh, we found the batteries. So batteries are now included, but good luck finding them. Caution, this show has caused some laboratory rats to rip through their cages, fly across the room, and brutally murder bloggers who speak negatively of the Rational Response Squad. The truth is out there. During the design and implementation of this radio show, all hell broke loose. No flying horses were harmed, although several villages were bombarded with aerial manure. The concept of linear time was severely damaged. No fish were harmed. However, all known gods were harmed and prove it to not exist. The show is poisonous and not intended for internal consumption. Do not use in any unspecified or unauthorized manner. We assume no liability for unauthorized use. Do not inject in any form. There is not enough room here to list all the possible do not. If you cannot keep from harming yourself or others or property with this radio show, you probably should just go to bed and stay there for the rest of your life. If you do so, kindly refrain from suing the bed or bedsheet manufacturer or the Rational Responders for even suggesting this. Visit us at www.rationalresponders.com for more details.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Response Squad. This spot would be the perfect place for you to advertise your free thought-related business or organization. With rates as low as 2 cents per listener, we blow away the advertising competition. Furthermore, what better way to spread the word than to support an organization fighting to free humanity from the mind disease known as theism? Send a message to rationalresponsesquad@hotmail.com to learn about our rates. Again, that's rationalresponsesquad@hotmail.com. Your ad could be right here in next week's episode.
Bowling for Columbine did it to the gun culture. Supersize Me did it to fast food. Now the God who wasn't there does it to religion. Holding modern Christianity up to a bright spotlight, this bold and often hilarious new film asks the questions few dare to ask. Your guide through the world of Christendom is former fundamentalist Brian Fleming, joined by such luminaries as Jesus Seminar fellow Robert Price, Professor Richard Dawkins, author Sam Harris, and historian Richard Carrier. See the movie the Los Angeles Times calls provocative, to put it mildly. Hold on to your faith. It's in for a bumpy ride. Purchase The God Who Wasn't There at www.rationalresponders.com.